Chapter 22. Kashyyyk, Mitel Base, Hangar Housing the Millennium Falcon. Jaina trotted into the hangar office, a set of improvised rooms set off from the rest of the building by sheets of corrugated durasteel that now served as headquarters and workshop for the Alima hunters, and paused just inside the door. The main office was dark. Jag? His voice floated through the curtains separating this chamber from the next.
Workshop!
She moved to and through the curtain.
We have some preliminary results from Talon Card on the data from Jason's shuttle.
Seeing what stood in the center of the workshop, she stopped short, staring. Surrounded by tables and shelves piled high with metal parts and electronic components, was a man. Probably a man, though he could have been some new variety of battle droid. Most of him was covered in a jumpsuit of crinkled, reflective silver-gray material. Over this were attached a helmet, metal gauntlets, boots, a mechanical rig held against his back by two straps crossing in an X pattern across his chest, and a broad belt holding pouches and a holster carrying an oversized blaster pistol. All these accoutrements had similar metallic surfaces, resembling brushed silver. The helmet was the one Jag had worn aboard Love Commander during the last engagement with Alima Rar, and the gauntlets were the crush gaunts sent by Boba Fett. Jaina scowled.
Why is it I always catch you playing dress-up?
Just assembling my gear. My current kit.
Jag pushed up the visor of his helmet, revealing his eyes and the bridge of his nose. Jaina approached and rapped her knuckles against his chest. It rang, the noise dulled by the cloth covering it.
And the breastplate, too.
Not exactly the height of fashion, is it?
Well, I'll forgive you for wearing too much shiny stuff if it's useful.
Oh, it's all useful.
Jag tapped each item in turn as he explained.
You're familiar with the helmet, the breastplate, and the crush gaunts.
Jaina nodded.
The backpack is a thruster. It's not much use in Coruscant-level gravity, but in low-grav conditions, it will get me around. Help make up for the fact that I can't do Jedi leaps. The blaster pistol I designed from the ground up.
He drew it, and managed a creditable Han Solo spin around his trigger finger, despite the presence of his crush gaunts.
It's oversized, so I can draw and fire it while wearing the gauntlets. It's engineered to function in the temperatures and vacuum of deep space. I can fire it while extravehicular.
He holstered it again.
Plus, it has a feature I don't think any blaster has ever had.
What's that?
He shook his head, and the bridge of his nose crinkled. Jaina guessed that he was grinning at her. She felt a flash of annoyance, but let it pass.
All right, keep your little boy's secret.
He gestured at the material of his flight suit.
Laced with cortosis alloy. Not much. With the Temple and the Academy of Ossus both abandoned, Master Luke could supply me with only a little. But a little still means that a graze from a lightsaber could result in minor or no damage instead of an amputation. The belt pouches, full of surprises for Alima. The boots...
His voice trailed off.
Yes?
Keep me from stubbing my toes.
She sighed.
Funny. Or not.
She looked over his battle array.
How long have you been working on this?
I've been carrying pieces of it for years, gradually adding items as I learned more about our quarry.
He shrugged. His entire torso rose as one piece.
It doesn't make me a Jedi, but we don't need another Jedi. We need something she can't predict. Also, if I take the crush gaunts off, I can pilot a starfighter in this. The suit offers all the usual virtues of a flight suit.
Well, I have something your suit doesn't have.
From her belt, she extracted a piece of flimsy and held it up before Jag's eyes. He focused on the astronomical coordinates written on it.
Is that what I hope it is?
Probable coordinates for Brescia Sio's habitat. Care to go there and have a picnic?
Definitely. You tell the tall fellow with half a name. Should I invite your parents?
Jaina nodded.
I think they have a right to be there.
Aboard the Anakin Solo. Alana's breath came in gasps, and she rolled over in her bed. Her eyes closed, her face flushed. In his chair beside her, Kytus winced. The nightmares had come again for her. It had been 2 days since her collapse, and she'd alternated between deep sleep and troubled dreams. The medical droid had said it was a not unusual reaction to emotional trauma, but those dispassionate words did nothing to ease the pain Kytus felt. Then Alana's eyes opened. She looked around, confused, trying to make sense of her surroundings, and caught sight of Kytus. She drew away from him, huddling against the wall. She reached for her thigh, her hand coming up with the injector pen her mother had given her long ago, the self-defense weapon with which she had once subdued a dangerous assassin. She was brandishing it against him, her own father. And Kytus felt a pain as sharp as if she had plunged it straight into his heart. Emotion made his voice hoarse.
Good morning, Alana. I'm glad you're feeling better.
She lowered the injector, but did not return it to its hideaway sheath.
I want to go home.
This has to be your home for the time being. You're safer here than anywhere.
She shook her head.
I'm safest with Mommy.
Bad people keep coming for you when you're with your mother. You need to be here.
They all died, didn't they?
Kytus nodded.
Many people died. And though I tried to get you far away from them, I couldn't get far enough away.
You were...
Alana struggled for the words.
You were bad. I hate you.
Another stab to his heart.
No, you don't. You can't hate someone who loves you. I love you, Alana.
No, you don't. You took me away from Mommy. You said you had permission, and you lied. You're the same as anyone else who wants to hurt me. I hate you!
She raised the injector again.
No. Alana, you can't. It's not possible. And I'll tell you why.
Kytus remained in his chair by force of will. Every instinct made him want to hold the little girl, to comfort her. Every instinct but the one that told him she needed to be free to decide, free to act.
You're right, that I took you without permission. But I don't need permission.
Yes, you do.
No, I don't. I'll tell you why. And you'll believe me. Because I can't lie to you about this. You'd know it if I lied. All you have to do is open up your heart, and you'll know how I feel. You'll know the truth.
Defiant, she kept her injector at the ready. Her expression dared him to reach for her.
Alana, Tenel Ka has the right to decide where you go, and what you learn, and how you are to be protected. And she has that right, because she's your mommy. She has had that right for all your life so far. I have the same right. Because I'm your daddy.
Alana froze, her expression transforming from defiant to unbelieving. She shook her head. Kaidus waited, pouring his love for her into the Force, trying to send it through his eyes into hers. He nodded.
You always knew you had a daddy. Your mommy had to keep who it was a secret. But now, you're old enough to understand it. I'm your daddy.
He felt the fear within her, the lingering pain from the events of 2 days earlier, begin to erode. Alana lowered her injector. Through the Force, he offered her nothing but the truth. For the first time in months, perhaps years, there was nothing of Sith training to his thoughts, nothing of the Jedi, no strategy, no planning. There was only what he felt. She came to him, clambering over the bed and into his lap. She put her arms around his neck.
Daddy.
Yes, your daddy. Forever and ever.
He held her to him, stroked her hair.
And when the war is over, and the bad people have been taught how wrong they were, and everyone is happy again, we can tell everyone that I'm your daddy. And you can sit right next to me and help me decide how things are going to be for everyone. Won't that be nice?
Korriban, World of the Sith. On a ruin of a planet, they stood in the ruins of a citadel, themselves the ruins of an ancient organization, the Sith Order. In a circular meeting chamber, its stone walls darkened by age and weathering, they stood in a circle, dark-hooded robes obscuring their identities. It was an unnecessary precaution. There was no one present who was not part of their order, but legends and records had taught them the merits of caution, of maintaining customs of secrecy and self-preservation even when in their safest havens. One of them, a dark-skinned human female, whose pale, geometric-patterned tattoos stood out in sharp relief on the skin of her cheeks, bowed to the assembly. Her voice was surprisingly light and musical, considering her somber appearance, as she answered the question put to her.
"Yes, my lord. I have news, and even speculation, concerning Alimarar."
"We will hear them, Dishan."
The words came from the man guiding this conclave, a human whose fully white eyes suggested blindness, but whose alert mannerisms said otherwise. Dishan continued.
"The ersatz Sith holocron provided to her traced her path back to her point of origin. It is an asteroid belt in a star system near Bimiel. When a cloaked ship comes available, I will requisition its use to pinpoint her location exactly."
The white-eyed leader's voice suggested skepticism.
"You think her significant enough to devote important resources to such a mission?"
"I do."
"Why?"
Dishan took a long breath, a delaying tactic allowing her a few more seconds to compose her argument.
"By offering the Jedi aid in their search for this woman..."
A buzz of offended comments from the others brought her up short. She glanced around, assessing the mood of the assembly, and decided that she would lose respect if she yielded to their outrage. Before the white-eyed man could bring them to order, she continued, her voice rising to cut through their complaints.
In one of my assumed identities, of course, as a Confederation intelligence operative. I would not aid the Jedi, but they must think of me as an ally.
The others quieted.
And having proved myself a legitimate intel officer, I received a considerable amount of information on their hunt for Ali Marar, which must necessarily include information and speculation about her. It seems that among the resources she inherited from Lumia is a force technique permitting her the projection of phantoms across space. It appears in every way to match the lost technique of Darth Vectivus.
At those words, the murmur rose again. Vectivus's history is clear. He was a fraud, someone muttered.
A fraud with an art that would benefit us all, said someone else.
I was not here for her visit. Could this Ali Marar be turned to our ends?
Yet a third questioned.
I think not. She seemed as insane as a piranha beetle with a needle through its brain.
The voice was barely audible above the other voices. The white-eyed man cleared his throat, and the others went silent.
We must recapture the woman. Extract the secrets of the technique from her, and seize the power source she utilizes.
There was regret in Dishon's tone as she replied.
I think not, my lord. The Jedi are now homing in on her location. Knowledge is much easier to obtain than to contain. Once they know where her base is, we will never be able to preserve that secret.
The white-eyed man considered.
Very well. You were correct, Dishon. This is of highest priority. We will not concern ourselves with a cloaked ship, but assign a fully armed warship to the task. I am recalling the Poison Moon, and assigning it to you for this mission. It will be equipped with explosives sufficient to destroy an asteroid. You will use it to locate the dark side energy source used to power Vectivus's force phantom technique and obliterate it. You will obtain any Sith artifacts in Ali Marar's possession. You will also capture Ali Marar, or, if circumstances warrant, kill her.
Dishon bowed again.
It will be my pleasure.
Sanctuary Moon of Endor. They made a curious parade, Luke decided. Not that he hadn't been part of many curious parades in the course of his curious life. First went the Hapen Security Vanguard, four spectacular-looking women. They wore the most stylish body armor imaginable, its graceful lines broken up by green and brown camouflage patterns that made the armor difficult to pick out amid Endor's forest vegetation. Behind the security guard by some 10 meters, walking side by side, came Luke and Queen Mother Tennel Ka, dressed completely inappropriately for their surroundings. Luke wearing his black Jedi Grand Master garments, Tennel Ka sporting a flowing gown in shimmering metallic shades of blue. Luke suspected that beneath it, Tennel Ka probably wore traditional Dathomiri battle dress. But he would never know unless an attack was staged against them and she felt the need to move freely. 10 meters farther back were the droids C-3PO and R2-D2, the former to deal with any Ewoks who might approach, and the latter, inasmuch as any droid could, representing a comfortable and friendly face for Tennel Ka. The main body of the Odd Safari walked behind the droids, Jedi Masters Saba Sebatine and Silgal. along with half a dozen advisers to the Queen Mother. At the rear of the party were four more Hapen security specialists. Luke pitched his voice as a whisper.
"Quite a retinue for a little walk in the woods. How many do you have to take with you when you just want to go to the refresher?"
Tenel Ka had not smiled in the brief time since her arrival on Endor, but she almost did now. Almost. To Luke, it seemed that the facial muscles that permitted such an expression no longer knew how to perform. Her whispered answer was matter of fact.
"In my own palace, none. In foreign palaces, a minimum of four."
"And if you're visiting Dathomir, where the only thing available is a bush?"
"It's the best defended bush within a dozen parsecs."
"I thought so."
They walked in silence for a little while. Luke could feel the tension within Tenel Ka. It roiled at the surface of her thoughts, like water just beginning to boil, but he did not feel it appropriate to hurry her toward the conversation to come. Tenel Ka waited until they found a broad clearing. At its center was a wide, nearly flat stone, some 4 meters across, the only spot of the clearing visited by shafts of sunlight. She raised her voice so that all could hear.
"This will do."
As she and Luke moved toward the stone, her guards scattered, forming a defensive perimeter around the clearing, while the Jedi Masters, Hapen advisors, and droids stood in a tight knot well away from its center. Luke sat at one edge of the stone. It was warm under him, even compared with the warmth of the forest air. He extended his senses through the Force to seek out any intelligences that might be close enough to listen, and found none, except for Tenel Ka, who was doing just as he was. She finally sat next to him.
"One of the problems with dealing with Jedi Masters is that they're so patient. It's enough to drive you crazy. They just wait you out."
Remembering his own time on Dagobah with Master Yoda, Luke nodded. "You're right. Now I've become exactly what used to make me insane with frustration. I wonder when that happened." Tenel Ka took a deep breath.
"You know that I turned my back on the Alliance, demanding that Jason be removed from power. Then I withdrew from the war altogether and did not pursue my agenda against Jason any longer."
"Yes. I assumed you had a good reason." That was the truth. Luke felt no anger or censure. Tenel Ka was the Queen Mother. She would not have wavered on this matter without cause.
"I don't know if it's a good reason. It's a very personal reason. Jason kidnapped my daughter, Alana. He threatened to kill her if I did not resume my duties as an Alliance member."
Luke winced. "I wish I could say I was surprised." He almost added he kidnapped Ben, too, and tortured him, but he clamped down on the words before they left him. Tenel Ka did not need to experience mental images of Jason torturing Alana. She did not need the additional fear and worry his words would cause.
I think, that he could probably do it. Kill my baby. The situation cut me in two. The Queen Mother arguing one course of action, Alana's mother arguing another. Alana's mother won."
"I understand.
But after what happened a few days ago, the firing of Centerpoint Station..."
Tenel Ka's voice wavered. Luke could feel her anguish growing within the Force. And, detecting her distress, Saba and Silgal glanced over at the two of them.
It shows the ends the Confederation is willing to go to. It shows how insane this war has become. The Hapes Consortium has been rebuilding for more than 15 years from the damage caused the last time the station was fired. The Corellians can use it to destroy whole worlds, if they want.
Luke nodded.
A while back, I thought that Alana and I could perhaps run away. They'd hunt us down, of course, the Alliance, or my political opponents from Hapes. Alana and I would die, but we'd die together, in each other's arms. Now it looks like we won't even have that tiny comfort. We're going to die, never having seen each other again.
You don't know that. If you saw something like that as a force vision, it isn't necessarily the true future.
I don't see visions of the future anymore. Not really. I just feel death and failure all around us, consuming us like a fire.
Tenel Ka looked down at her hand, resting palm up in her lap. It twitched, and Luke sensed she longed for her lightsaber to be there, lit, with enemies in front of her. Enemies she could attack personally, physically.
I have to be the Queen Mother, Master Skywalker. I have to decide what's right for my people.
Yes.
I have to turn my fleets against the evil Jason represents. And then I have to watch him kill my baby.
An overpowering wave of grief rolled off Tenel Ka. Luke almost reached for her to comfort her, but in the sight of so many others, such a gesture would be utterly inappropriate. He saw Silgal take an involuntary step toward them, but the Mon Cal healer caught herself and stepped back again. Has your intelligence service determined where Alana is? To stage a rescue?
They don't have to. I can feel her. Sometimes she's on Coruscant, sometimes elsewhere. Her movements match those of the Anakin Solo.
The events of just a few days earlier clicked together in Luke's thoughts. The little girl Jason had been using as a human shield. That had to have been Alana. Luke decided not to mention it. A grief-stricken Queen Mother is of no more use to the Hapens than a grief-stricken Jedi is to the Order. What if we just go in and retrieve Alana for you? She looked at him, a new dread in her eyes. This time, an unwillingness to let herself hope for something so tremendous.
If I thought it could be done, I'd have done it already.
One former Jedi and limitless wealth can accomplish a lot of things. Luke's gesture took in all of the sanctuary moon, back to his outpost and beyond. A whole order of Jedi can accomplish other things.
I couldn't ask you to.
And you didn't. But I think it's the right thing to do. The right thing from a personal and military point of view. Without Alana, Jason loses his influence over the consortium. With the revelation of his threat to kill Alana, Admiral Neothel may reconsider her alliance with Jason. With the odds shifted away from the alliance, Jason and Neothel may have to sue for peace. Rescuing Alana could end this war, Tenel Ka. He offered his hand to her. The Jedi Order offers. Slowly, as if not daring to believe her luck, Tenel Ka took it.
The Hapes Consortium accepts. With gratitude.